Russia.
So Yaakov Avinu goes to the yeshiva later. At the end of Parsha Vayera, Yitzchak goes to the yeshiva of Shem. At the very end of after the Akedah, so if you look at the Pesukim carefully, it says that Avram and his staff go off to Be'er Sheva. Yitzchak can't find him. He's not in the Parsha. This week also, when Avram comes to be Maspid Sarah, Yitzchak's not there. It's just strange. Why isn't Avram Yitzchak coming? Why isn't Yitzchak coming to take care of Sarah? So we don't know where he is exactly. There is a suggestion that because Sarah passed away upon finding out about the Akedah, that they didn't tell Yitzchak. They didn't want him to have the guilt that he brought his mother's Ptira. So there's one theory that they didn't tell Yitzchak what happened until much, much later on. But the Rashi points out that he went to the yeshiva of Shem. And at the end of this coming week's parsha told us, say Yaakov has to run. He has to hide from Esav. So Rashi says the language is Tomon. He hid himself in the yeshiva of Eva. We're not sure exactly how these yeshivas looked. We know what it means. We think that yeshivas began in the 1600s, so we're not really sure what that meant. But most likely, it means that there was some kind of approach to life that Shem and Eva had. This is really what we're discussing right now, is the thoughts of Yaakov Kamenetsky, one of the great the giants of Torah in America in the later 20th century. So this is really along the lines of what he suggests. He suggests that Eber had some kind of approach to life, and Yaakov needed to figure out something, and he went to Eber. And by extrapolation, I would suggest the same thing about Yitzchak. Now, we know one thing about Eber. The Gemara said, the Chumash says at the end of Parshas Noach, that in Eber's time, the world spread out. And kibiyomav niflega haaretz. People went to different places. People left their homes and started anew. So Yaakov says that's what Yaakov had to figure out at the end of the sixth parsha. He had to figure out he's leaving his parents' home. He's not going to have access to his parents, and he has to find out how do you do this? How do you live life when you're on the run? How do you live life away from home? How do you live life on foreign shores that may not be so friendly? So he steals away to Eber, because Eber's done this already. And Eber can help him figure this out. And it takes 14 years. But after 14 years, then he's ready to engage once again an unfriendly place, the place of Lavan, different set of values. He's able to find, to begin a family. So to establish a family and to find both his wives, so to speak, and to find the love of his life, how is that going to happen? So you need to get guidance. So Yitzchak hadn't done this. One could even suggest that Yitzchak was not the best person. Yitzchak, and that's what's so surprising, that both left their father's yeshiva, so to speak. But you can imagine that Yitzchak, being on the level of having been able to give up his life, was it living life on a different level. And he couldn't steer Yaakov to how do you deal with the unfriendly territories of Lavan. I would assume Yitzchak had the same thing. How does Yitzchak, where does he go after the Akedah? Where do you go after you've sacrificed your life for God? Where do you go after you've become a kodesh, so to speak? How do you figure out life? In my generation, because growing up, so I grew up in I grew up in Toronto. Toronto was heavily a refugee community. It was a survivor community. I wouldn't call them survivors there, because they did much more than survive. They thrived. They built up, as you know, in America, Chicago. That generation is like the great generation. So somehow, after you come through a harrowing experience, and your life is on, and you've given up your life basically for the Rabbonu Shalom. So, what happens next? What's the next act, so to speak? What is there more to do in life? So, he had to go to a place like Shem. Avram had not done this yet. Avram continuously had new challenges, new people to meet, new places to go. but and Avram hadn't lived post the cave. So he had to find, he had to stay in Haram, or he had to stay in Yerushalayim. That's where Shem's yeshiva was. Shem is Malki Tzedek. We know that Yerushalayim at that point was already some unusual place. Because that's what the Ramban points out, that we were introduced to Yerushalayim in the parasha of Lech Lecha. After Avram trounces the four kings, so he goes to Malki Tzedek. Malki Tzedek is Shem, Malki Tzedek is in Yerushalayim. So Ramban says that Malki Tzedek was the name of the king, but not his personal name. He was like we have the name Paro. Paro was the Your Highness of Mitzrayim. So Malki Tzedek was the Your Highness of Yerushalayim. So Ramban says if a city says the only name we can give our mayor is King of Justice, then you know they're living life in a very elegant. Can you imagine that? That's the only name you can give the mayor of the town, and you're not paid to do so, and he hasn't bought the name. So that means that Yerushalayim was already an unusual place. Yerushalayim gathered people of very very high aspirations in life. So apparently Yitzchak had to find a new place, and Yaakov had to find a new place, and that's what we're going to focus on this morning. If we had a yeshiva to run away to, if we had a polar star of thought to go, so where should we find ourselves? What are we looking at? We look at 2017, the next 5, 10, the next decade or two. What are the trends that we see? So I would suggest, and many of the ideas that we're going to portray, you've thought about and heard about. So let me describe a few vignettes, and I would say three vignettes from Rabbi Soloveitchik, from Rabbi Joseph Soloveitchik, the Rav. The great story about Rabbi Soloveitchik is not, I don't think it's recorded. I heard it from a presentation that was given in our shul by the Rav of a Rav in Vancouver and then Livingston. He's one of the great Boston families, and he was very close to the Rav. And there was the Rav during the summers used to take a group and go to what's the name I'm forgetting again? Onset. But the name of the rabbi is Forrester. Right, very Forrester. Thank you very much. So he used to go to Onset, which we only know about because the Rav went there. Otherwise, no one ever heard of the town of Onset, no, Cape Cod or something, somewhere over there. And he would study with a group of Talmidim. And then, as he got older, he would do this in Boston. But I think this is still back in Onset. So he would learn with the boys Gemara in the morning. That was the shiur that he would give. And one day he said, you know, I'd like to just learn with you Tanya. I'd like to learn with you the major philosophical work of the Lubavitcher Hasidim, written by the Bala Tanya. The Rav was very, very familiar with the Tanya because when he was young, this is recorded, he had a teacher who was a Lubavitcher. And so in the not only spare time of his learning, he would teach the boys Lubavitch thinking. And apparently he would teach them Tanya from time to time. And he always had it it was done in a subterfuge way, because that was not the curriculum. So whenever the Rav's father would come to inspect the class, he would put the Tanya back under the desk. It was like when I was a kid, the teachers who were smoking, they would put the cigarettes under the desk. They always had that space, so to speak. So, but the Rav became familiar because as a child, you become much more familiar with the things that you're not supposed to be doing, the things you're supposed to be doing. So he said, let me discuss with you Tanya. Anyways, so that day they discussed Tanya in addition to learning. And then that became sort of a buzz in town that the Rav was teaching Tanya. And apparently, I don't fully understand it, it became a buzz that he was uncomfortable with. And after a day or two, he perceived it as being either negative or some cynicism or something. So he said to the Talmidim, we're going to go back to just learning Gemara together. the regular parishma. And then he said that I see that my talmidim are more interested in what's going on in my head than not in my heart. And for me, that was a painful comment. But what the Rebbe was pointing out, what the Rebbe was expressing, was that he had been enormously successful in bringing back the prestige of halacha to Klal Yisrael. Ish halacha, the man of halacha. There was, when you go back, this is before my times, but from my readings in the 50s, in the early 60s, so the Jewish people were very taken with the ideas of Judaism. But the ongoing practice, the precise observance of halacha, that wasn't so important. I remember growing up as a kid where one of the mantras of the rabbinate was I have cardiac Jews. Jews are Jews in their heart. Good people, want to do good, and great people, and great philanthropists, and people who only want to do good and do the right thing. But when it came to the precise observance of halacha, that wasn't so important. The Rebbe was enormously successful in restoring the concern for the precision of halacha, as he spoke about many, many times, and enormously successful in maintaining within our community the study of halacha and the studies, but there was a price to pay. And the price to pay was whenever you move the pendulum in one direction, you have to often overcompensate. And the price to pay was that we as a group became perhaps singularly focused on Gemara and understanding on the observance of mitzvahs, and maybe we lost out a little bit on the heart, on the philosophy, on the warmth of a Torah lifestyle. And that's something that we have to now be on top of to swing the opinion a little bit back, because there's only so long that a generation can maintain the service of the head without the service of the heart. And certainly in terms of our children, they're going to be much more engaged in that, and we see that happening in many, many communities that I see within my own community, for example. I have Baruch Hashem, a wide age range, and the members of my shul that are maybe 20, 30 years my younger, so they, my junior, I have a very good, we would say, safam shutefet, right? We speak very well with it. But I have a younger group who are wonderful people, tremendous Yuri Shemayim, and very important contributors to the shul, you know, in terms of their presence and their involvement, but they are much more taken by certain Hasidic ideas. They're much more taken by ideas that are less rigorous than I would normally present. And as a result, I have a younger Rav who's a stellar person, and he's able to speak to them sort of as a better, he understands their language better. And again, it's not across the board, but there is certainly a significant group that is, that the way that I would present doesn't speak and doesn't resonate in the same way that a younger Rav who has a different exposure, a different background, and that's the beauty of Torah. Torah is this broad tapestry of ideas and of thoughts and of presentations, and Jews find their space, find their place. And our job is to make the correct associations and present Torah in the broadest of fashion so that every Jew does find his place and his space. But that's an indication of the importance of us making sure that we're speaking to the heart even as we speak to the head. Claudius, we have the mitzvah of tefillin. Mitzvah of tefillin is on the top part of our arms with keneged alev. And as the Kadosh Baruch Hu is giving us this insight that as we observe the particularities of any particular mitzvah, we have to make sure that our observance does not become a sort of a cold practice, but becomes something that we find to be engaging. We find engages our hearts. We feel it has a brings us closer to Kadosh Baruch Hu, and we have to do the work of making that connection, of stressing that which is there. The Rav once expressed a similar idea in a little bit of a different way. He said that in America, and that was his way of saying, not that Europe was wonderful, but that was a way of saying in the Western thought. He said that people don't look to daven, they look to be gedavened. In other words, there's a young man, I'm not sure if Yerov has presented this letter to you, the Eitan Gross letter, I'm sure at some point you'll present it. So he describes as a young man from background from our community, modern Orthodox community, and he describes how observance has become a checklist. So this is a wonderful young man. He's doing the checklist. He's davening, he's putting on, he's doing all the things he wanted to do. But in his mind, he has a checklist, and as long as he does the checklist, he's good. And he is good, he's wonderful. But that's what the Rebbe was pointing out, that sometimes we look to be gedavened, we know we have to check this off. These are all good things, but these are things that we have to be attuned to, that our observance has to be much more heartsick, has to engage us, and if we find ourselves that our hearts are not engaged, that we don't sense that we're giving a Kadosh Baruch Hu a certain amount of nachas when we do his mitzvahs, so then it means we have to refocus, we have to retool, we have to figure out how we can brush that up, so to speak. The Rebbe said a similar idea in a different nusach, and this is just a different phrase, but it's the same idea. It says in America, and again, that was his way of describing us. He said in America we have Shabbos, we don't have Erev Shabbos, and if one thinks about like an Erev Shabbos in Yerushalayim and an Erev Shabbos in New Jersey. So they're different, right? And Erev Shabbos in Yerushalayim is 2-3 o'clock. If you're not fully shopped, you're done. It's time to call a neighbor to find out to get lunch or something, because just things, everything comes to a natural, slow termination. The week is just edging out because Shabbos is coming. And you can feel already Shabbos an hour or two before. You feel the frenzy in the morning, and then things slow down. And in our communities, we feel the frenzy of Erev Shabbos, and that's a fantastic thing. You go into a store of Shabbos, you certainly feel the pulse of Shabbos coming. And that's fantastic, and that's the way it should be. Our Erev Shabbos, though, is, as one of my friends once described, Erev Shabbos is, if I get to shul, by Lechadori, still dripping from the shower, right? And I sneak in, and I'm there by Lechadori, I say, made it, right? I'm safe, right? So that's, and it's good, it's quality, because it's not easy, an Erev Shabbos, and certainly an early Erev Shabbos. And I'm not criticizing, but I'm saying that this speaks to the Ish Halacha, speaks that halachically, we made it, right? There's no Nechel Shabbos. And we did Kovet Shabbos. And we're showered and we're dressed and we're in there. And we're kids next to us. And we made that Minchel a bit late. And we do Tesefer Shabbos. Did everything, right? But that's what Rav was pointing out. That and there is an excitement that is present in all of that. It's almost it's an excitement. It's a frenzy. It's almost an anxiety sometimes. But it's different. It's not that slow, tremendous appreciation that something very, very special is about to happen, even though our Shabbos are very special. But these are the tweaks, so to speak, that we've been enormously successful in the Rav's mandate and charge to us to be more observant of the precision of Halacha. Enormous, and we have to revel in that success. And if one would have said in the 50s or 60s that we would be here in 2017 and Baruch Hashem, we have communities, modern Orthodox communities that are vibrant, that are focused on growth, and in learning more and studying more, and that Baruch Hashem, our children are attending day schools and high schools, and they're from it. And that we would have thought, people would have told us in the 50s and 60s, this is what's going to happen. We would have said, not so sure. So we've been enormously successful. But Yaakov and Yitzchak had to figure out what's the next step. It was one of the, we can't revel in our success. If we revel too long in our success, then we end up very quickly behind the curve and falling asleep at the wheel. So that's what is precious about these kinds of conversations, because it's trying to figure out what do we have to focus on. I was thinking this morning that a lot of this is captured in a pasuk, an interpretation by Rav Hirsch. And that is the pasuk, Torah Hashem Tamima, Meshivas Nafash. God's Torah is complete, it's refreshing. So Rav Hirsch interpreted Torah Hashem Tamima, when God's Torah is complete, then it's refreshing. And in other words, when we embrace the totality of Torah, when we realize it engages the heart and the mind. And then there's a very sensitive thing that we have to be aware of. And that is that, and this is, I speak to Yerov and to myself, that culture has it, that it's very often for us, very often hard for us to teach the entirety of Torah. There are ideas in the culture around us that are very uncomfortable and makes it uncomfortable to teach certain truths of Torah. And that has to be of great concern. Whenever we can't teach Torah Hashem Tamima, so then it can't have the same Meshivas Nafesh. Again, these are concerns that we have. We have to learn how to be able to express the entirety of Torah even in a culture that will judge us negatively because of that. Right? We have certain egalitarianism is something that can be discussed, that is part of the culture, and many of our children will judge Torah negatively because it's not egalitarian, because we have Konim, Levim, Israelim, different access to Beis HaMikdash, men, women, different roles in terms of the contribution to Yadus, and that concept is anathema to the culture that we're in. We have to learn how to teach Torah and just make sure we understand HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Torah and learn, just like Yaakov and Yitzchak had to prepare themselves for a less friendly environment for different reasons. Yitzchak, because of his successes, he had to figure out what's the next, where do you go from being enormously successful? That's part of our job. We've been enormously successful in the teaching of Torah. We have to figure out what's the next step. How does one maintain that? It's very hard to maintain that. It'd be very hard for Yitzchak to teach Yaakov how to be, give up his life. And he had to figure that out. And Yaakov had to figure out how to be, go forward in unfriendly territories. And that's, I think, very much part of our thinking. What I would suggest and is that the ideas that we should be thinking about, the directions we should be taking, I'll frame it in terms of an observation this upcoming week's parsha. In this upcoming week's parsha, Parsha has told us that Yaakov makes his way to his father Yitzchak to get the bracha. You'll notice that, and you'll notice in this week's parsha that Yaakov comes to Yitzchak to get the bracha, and Yitzchak opens up by saying Re'ei Re'ech Mani. Right, you come into the room, and the scent is the scent of Gan Eden. Right, Kireach Hasad, Sheberuch Hashem. And he goes on to say, "V'yitin lecha," and I'm going to give you the blessing of Mitalo Shemayim, Mishmani Oretz, blessing of prosperity, grace by God. But you'll notice that we break in the middle of Yitzchak's bracha. It says, "Re'ei Re'ech Pani, Kireach Hasad." Look at the blessing that you have, and then we call up Shishi. Now, these breaks are not so bothersome because we don't know exactly when they happened. Sometime in the times of the Rishonim, Klal Yisrael decided where to put the breaks. They're not mandated by Chazal, by the Gemara. But the rule is, if you have a good drasha to give on why there's a break, so then you give that drasha. You don't have to tell people that you're not sure how exactly how it happened. So Klal Yisrael has a certain wisdom. And the Baal Koreh, in the middle of the bracha, Re'ei Re'ech B'ni, you know it's the middle because the next sentence begins with and. Ve'yiten. Right? One of the great sins of composition, which is no longer true. You can't begin a sentence with that. But why does the Baal Koreh break in the middle? It occurred to me that the wisdom over here is that when everyone gives a bracha, the first bracha is Re'ei Re'ech B'ni Kerech. Look what you have. The first bracha that you can give, and that's why Yitzchak comes in, Yaakov comes in, and Yitzchak says, Re'ei, look, Re'ech B'ni Kerech Hasana. Look what just filled the room. Look at the scent that you have. Stop. That requires a moment's thought. That requires figuring it out. The first bracha is figure out the brachas that you have. Realize the brachas that you have. After you call up Shishi, you took a break, all right, now we'll go on to the rest. V'itin l'cha. But the most important, not the most important, but no bracha can be successful without first meditating on what has the Kodesh Baruch Hu already given us? What do we have to work with? And I think that is the approach that we have to have going forward. That we have challenges, we have challenges. To look at the years ahead in a negative way, we often so often hear all the concerns that we have, and even discuss the concerns of the new world of social media. These are things that I'm sure you've all discussed. There is a new world out there, so to speak. And one of the most frightening things about having a new world when you're at my age is being a greener to the next. To your children. In other words, we didn't think it could happen to us because we grew up in the same country, because we have the same language, we don't have accents. So all of the generation gap that some of us grew up with, we thought that we need not worry about it. Because Baruch Hu in his infinite wisdom says, no, you can have the same language, you can be in the same country, you can read the same newspapers, and you can still be a greener. Because the Kodesh Baruch Hu moves the world so quickly, and the technology is so much more natural to our children. The Kodesh Baruch Hu says, same country, same language, but you got to figure this out. You got to try as much as we can to stay up to date with our children. So those are the concerns, the negative. But I think we should focus on for a moment. How do we address? So I think that we address this by Re'ei Re'ech B'ni. First of all, look at our tremendous successes. Look what HaKadosh Baruch Hu has done for us. Look how HaKadosh Baruch Hu has given us the blessings of what you have in Chicago, the blessings of affluence, the blessings of having so many mosdos, so many institutions of Torah, of education to choose from, that overwhelmingly our children are next to us, they're with us, they're part of our program, so to speak. That's a huge bracha to begin with. And then we have other brachas that we have to identify. I'll give you three that come to my mind. One is, I mentioned over Shabbos, the Brach of Shabbos. The Brach of Shabbos is one that's going to become more and more meaningful as time goes on. And that's something that is hard to be sufficiently grateful for. In other words, in our minds, Shabbos is this magnificent family day, recharge day, restful day, right? If you would have told us 10, 15 years ago that Shabbos would be more important going forward, we would have said, don't know what you mean. But we see it. We see that as the weeks And as the engagement of high tech and the absolute no rest that cell phones, texting, emails, that's years ago. Now you have Instagram, you have Snapchat, you have even Twitter's making its way out. So this ongoing access and the ongoing having to be on and having to be connected. So going forward, Shabbos is going to be even much more meaningful. It's going to be a much greater bracha that our parents couldn't even imagine, that we couldn't have imagined 20 years ago. And the respect that Shabbos is going to get from the American culture is going to be enormous, because they're going to see that we're able to do something because Kadosh Baruch Hu gave it to us, which can't be replicated. Can't be. Because if you have a man-made or man-mandated Shabbos, there are exceptions. Right? It's only if God gives it to you that the exceptions are going to be pikuach nefesh. There won't be other exceptions. So to create a bubble of Shabbos can only be something that's minas shamayim. So that concept, and that we have it, for me, first of all, it's going to be something that we'll be able to show our children, look at the great gift that you have, which nobody else could have. In addition, in my mind, it has to be a way of strengthening one's faith, one's emunah. Because Shabbos could not happen without the Rebbeinu Shlomo giving it to us. And then to have something in your legacy, in your religion, which, as time goes on, picks up new meanings and becomes deeper and more meaningful, only God could figure this out. No human being could construct something that becomes something of greater preciousness as time proceeds. So that's Re'ei Re'ech Bani, able to show your children, look at Shabbos, look at Yom Tov. And then we are a generation, or generations already, that are living prophecies. There's a pasuk in Yechezkel, which for me is such a great source of inspiration. I think years ago it was a song. V'atem harei Yisrael, Yechezkel says, and you, the hills of Israel, anapchem titenu, you hills of Israel are going to give rise and carry branches. Uperichem tiso, and you will carry fruit. L'ami Yisrael, for my people. Kikeru levoi, because they're coming back. Now, there were over 1,000 years where this pasuk was poetry. Our generation lives this pasuk. We know that the land of Israel did not have the ability to cultivate Israel till the mid-20th century. It didn't happen. And in the 20th, so when we started coming back to Eretz Yisrael, and now you go through the land of Israel, and that we are, that Israel produces and exports. And I often will tell my Balabatim, and it's true in Chicago as well. You can go to every so often I get a call. We have tangerines, clementines from Israel. We have carrots from Israel, trumois from Israel. Yeah. So I said, before we talk about trumois and Israel, just stop for a moment. Do you realize what's happening? You're in Bergenfield, a little town in New Jersey, and you have carrots from Eretz Israel. If somebody would have told your parents, they're going to go to the market, you're going to go to a store, and they're going to be bringing in carrots from Israel, they would have laughed at you. And you go to the store, and you see a nevuah of Yechezkel coming through. What generation could shop and pick up fruit and say, holding their hands and say, "V'anabchem titein v'pirichem tiso, atem hori Yisrael." So we're living these nevuahs. We're living these prophecies. We have to make ourselves more aware of it. They have to make our children more aware. And that has to be a great source of, again, of emunah, faith. We're living in times where faith has come under attack much more than in previous times, much more than in recent generations. And the aggressiveness of certain people with atheists and their access to our minds and our children's minds is enormous because of social media. So there used to be a time when people didn't enjoy reading, so you didn't weren't exposed to lots of ideas. And many kids don't enjoy reading, but now it's easy access. But we have Erech B'ni, we have Shabbos, we have Eretz Yisrael. We are living various nevuos. There's a Ramban, I think, in Yeshayahu that says that we're going to come back to Israel by the grace of the nations of the world. Sure, you spoke about the Balfour Declaration. The Balfour Declaration was, and then in the UN vote, was again the fulfillment of ideas that in previous generations they could not have imagined and would have been cynical if they really thought about it. And for us, we live these ideas. And then the third source of bracha that we have is our dedication to the study of Torah. That it's important to us. That it's what we set time aside for doing. And I pointed this out to my Talmidim, the study of Torah is the last stand that we have in terms of having control over the way our minds work. In other words, that the speed and the access of information, the speed by which one can access information, and the wealth of information that we have available is wonderful. That's a great draw. But it has the negative effect of discouraging any excitement to research, any excitement to not know something. And to try to find something out, to harbor curiosity. Nobody harbors curiosity because why should you? Yeah, a few minutes, you can find out whatever you want to find out. But that idea of having lingering questions, and that's part of who we are. The idea of trying to study a text carefully. So the minds of Western culture are going to be changing. That's the. I think it's well indicated that there's a certain plasticity to minds. But Talmud Torah is the last stand where we're going to be able to benefit from the access we have to information and to Torah through social media. It'll be a source of tremendous, tremendous benefit. But so far, they can't think for us. That is happening. Right. So far, they can't generate a sense of curiosity and excitement to figuring things out. And in every base of medrash, that's still happening. And that I think will have to continue. So I think that what we're looking at is that we are at a period of time where if we're alert and we understand and we're focused, so then we can be the Yitzchak and the Yaakov looking for a new base of medrash to speak to. What are we concerned about? We have to be concerned about Torah Hashem Tamima, being able to give the complete message of Torah, even the ideas that are uncomfortable and do not resonate. We have to look forward to being able to recharge the heart into the careful observance of Torah, not that much different than the Hasidic movement was 700 years ago and did so with tremendous success. And what are the very optimistic signs that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has given us? And those are the mitzvahs that will resonate so much more, Shabbos by way of great example. The living prophecies, living at a time where we can appreciate parts of Nevuah and parts of Torah that previous generations could not imagine. And our ongoing commitment to the study of Torah as being a great filter, so to speak, to be able to appreciate the greatness and the blessing that technology gives us, and be able to take a step back and say, but we still have to hold on to some of the great gifts that God has given us and be sure they don't get taken away. We'll close with a conversation that my wife and I had with one of the senior rabbanim of America, Rabbi Pelkowitz, a man probably in his high 80s, and a very successful rabbi in America, and one of the, I go back to the 60s and 70s, one of the very successful rabbanim in that time in Far Rockaway. And there was a, Rabbi Pelkowitz is, I would say, is my son married his granddaughter, so we have a little bit of family connection, and we took an opportunity to visit him not that many weeks ago, and we thought that this would be a great time to sort of pick his brain and how he would address some of the issues that that we're confronting now. So as we began to discuss some of the issues, he said, I could not be a rabbi to your generation, to my grandchildren's generation. And he says, and you could not have been a rabbi to my generation. He says, Kadosh Baruch Hu sends, gives us insight as we need it. He said, I was able, it was the 60s, the 70s, God gave me the blessing, the insight to be able to speak to my people and to inspire them and to help them navigate what they went to. You would not be able to do it. You're not that, you're not of that ilk, right? But he said, but now, this man in his late 80s, I don't know how to negotiate the grand that you have to negotiate, the grand that my grandchildren have to negotiate. Kadosh Baruch Hu gives insight, gives Klal Yisrael great blessings, gives Klal Yisrael new areas that they have to chart and figure out, and then Kadosh Baruch Hu gives the shlichim that that Klal Yisrael needs. And that, I think, sums up the what we have to figure out, we have to focus on, and I think that as long as you have Rabbanim like Reb Aaron, and you have a community such as yours that comes together on a Sunday morning to think about these things, then you have the greatest blessing and the greatest assurance that the Rebbe Shlom will see us, see what we aspire to accomplish, and give us the talents and the blessings and the wherewithal to once again not just survive, but to thrive and to create another generation of people that give a Kadosh Baruch Hu great, great nachas.
Okay, no, that's fine. I'm just traveling to...
Until my wife
comes. Oh, sure, she's coming here.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, fine. Okay. That's great, that's amazing.
Thank you so much.
So, I'm playing this in the Parsha Vayetzer.